Estoy de acuerdo. Welcome to our clinic, Dr. Van Heer. We miss you so much, Doctor. I lied on the He dumped me yesterday. I lied on your friend. He dumped me yesterday. So, you know. So the FM plus is now my only hope, you know. Another has become sensitive. Don't.
Yes, I indicated last week that I will be active on Friday. I was really not aware of Monday's meeting checklist. Otherwise, I would have at least apologized. I was surprised when my colleague here from another part the second question, chairperson, I also like to express my thanks to you for missing me as well as the other colleagues for quoting me yesterday, in whatever line it was. Yes, I'm here and I will support you in discussing the problem, not to the chairperson. Thank you.
Yeah, no, they were putting you on good things that they were as a point of reference, you know, whenever they want to ambush, want to strengthen or enrich their debate, they were always referring to what you said in other meetings. That's good. So they're leaving a good legacy in the program. Yeah, before we start on the look into the amendment as proposed by the committee, I just want to convey our sincere thanks and gratitude to our colleague Honorable Museki, who was deployed this morning to go and deal with the media in informing the public about the coming public hearings on the review of the criminal justice system. He was not aware, but he was informed at the 11th hour that they must go and do the interview at the SABC this morning. And he excelled I think it's imperative for me to thank him in your presence today. He has done us proud because they were doing that not on behalf of this committee. Not on behalf of the HOC, but on behalf of Parliament, the whole Parliament. As you are aware, that George Shulley has been nominated to lead as a coordinator of both houses. So, Musa was sending in for me, and he done such a wonderful job. I think he deserves to be sent formally in this meeting. Right in the future, when you are called to do this thing, I know you only have one thing, but thank you very much. You have done me and this committee proud. I got calls from people who appreciated that what you are doing and what you have done. The second one is to inform my colleagues that in terms of the amendment that we propose in the two bills, the DSO bills, I got a call from my colleagues in the National Assembly that they are so elated with what we have done in those bills. They are happy with those amendments, and the fact that flipped their minds and thinking in eyes. So, and they are happy that we managed to pick that up and corrected those particular versions of the bill. And thanks to, my thanks go to you, colleagues, because it is your sharpness in identifying some of those gaps. All parties contributed to the betterment of those bills, regardless of whether they support the bills or not, but just to improve on the the work before us, all parties participated through the conflict and it has been. As I said, the other day, that in this community, you don't have what we call the filibustering. Just a constructive engagement. Thank you very much, my colleague. Yeah. One other announcement. There was a proposal that we debate this bill tomorrow. The DSOB. But we have decided against that as we call it. We said no. We want to allow parties to go and prepare their speeches nicely so that we don't write them. Because if they must debate with me tomorrow, it means they have to write to their colleagues in the NA to get their speeches that they don't belong to them, you know. I want this member to have their own speeches, not to take speeches from the NA. Hence, I said, no, I can't force my members to debate this thing tomorrow. I'll allow members to go and do their own speeches. So come next week, the 27th, the date when we're going to debate the DSOB. But anyway, our colleague that it clashes with the recent program that I was talking about earlier on the public hearing. But these are very good ideas. We'll see how we can do. Maybe we can deploy some to continue with the public hearing or some aggregating. But we'll cross the bridge when we arrive at it. So it's that report that I want to give in terms of the debate of the DSO. Fourthly, members will recall that we're supposed to get negotiating or even final mandates on the customer bond partnership. Now, there was this complaint by some stakeholders, and mainly traditional leaders, who said that bill is diluting their cultures and whatever. So, as Parliament, we decided to defer voting on that bill now. We are going to further consult, we decided to consult the White House to see if whatever we are doing here, we are not pushed to take the Western cultures above that of our own cultures. So, and I know that that bill is aimed at improving the lives of the majority of South Africans. And so we can forge ahead with that bill while the recent people are trying to please, they're not yet with it. Hence, I want to defer voting on that bill until further notice. But the whips in my committee assured me that they'll come up with a program where the bill will be passed sealed this term or before election. So I'll rely on my wits to assist the Sarata way. The week where we can invite all those affected stakeholders to come and talk to us. But the format, we'll decide on the format on how to deal with it. So we're still on the early stage on trying to prepare whatever we can do. I think I've cleared some of the housekeeping issues. Unless there's something that the members want to comment on, we can now, so that we move straight to give Northern Director and Sister a chance to address us on the bill, the criminal procedure bill that is before us. I see how many of you want to address the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on your comment on some of the thinking that we will be having for in future, looking at the program that we have before us, though it might be changed tomorrow when we discuss it, as far as it goes, on the 19th, it would seem to think that would be the last sitting of the House. Then on the 20th, it's a constituency date, and it's right through. I see no any other amendment that comes forth. I don't know whether this now probably might change tomorrow when we discuss it. Thank you.
Now, the fortunate part of this committee is because we are having with in this committee who are always going to assist us in looking ahead. Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I think because of the congestion, all the bills that we have in the multi-party work meeting, they will definitely be changed. So I must urge the work to attend those multi-party work meeting. Definitely there are going to be changes, and we anticipate working much longer than we thought to pass most of the votes. So I think the other parties will sit in the multi-party work meeting and hear about the changes will be discussed there. Also the DSO votes because of the 3-day rule. And we don't want to rush anything. We want to give it enough time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I can see it off when to
person is in the same line arguing here. You also indicated that some certain provinces in 25, something 25 November, somewhere in December. This person, we really urgently need to get a fixed program because all members, all colleagues are involved in the political parties for the coming election again. So if we really need that information, very urgently, Chairperson, and I hear what they say, we have a joint program in half an hour's time. We can have a tomorrow's meeting, we have a work meeting at 1 o'clock. But Chairperson, it's very important. I mean, we cannot plan properly unless we have a clear indication of what's going on. And I understand why the colleague Mackie is going to say, namely that we are the president in part of the legislation, but I just want to raise this issue. It's not the lack of interest. I think you know your members here, but it's not the lack of interest in the person here. It's because of other commitments. We don't go into riots inside the sea point or wherever. We are living with other members here, but we just want to bring this as an intention, not a lack of interest from all the members. I think I talk on behalf of all the members, but we need a plan for that. I also understand your position that you need to fall in with the arrangement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're noting that. In fact, I will request Wilgas that that program that starts from the 24th. That means that the members have visited the United States now. Even our own program is there because they must have visited. So whatever change, so let's look at which. On which date are we meeting? So the program is out, our committee program is out, with you, and the program that will be going out to public hearing is out as well. But once we have yet to get it, they get it. Honorable Ndulu.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I just want to help the colleagues. That's The chief whip of the MCOP has requested us to stay in this meeting because of the congestion of the bill. She said she will excuse us from the joint program committee. So it means then we'll be attending the multi-party whip where you'll be able to correct the program. Because it is us who are formulating the program. It's only the circumstances which deviate us from our normal program.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That's a special dimension. Let's see, there are no more comments. I think we can now formally welcome my tongue can use that not only the only Yeah, for this, back to the criminal procedure amendment bill. Yesterday, you remember that they gave us a framework on what we requested. I want to check if we're still singing from the same hymn book. I'll allow the team to address us on those amendments as proposed and see if we're still comfortable with them. But if then the committee will feel maybe we made a decision yesterday, want to get back to the original version. Is that your answer? But, yeah. Welcome, Lawrence. We're all here.
Thank you very much, Chair. I won't be long. I've handed out two documents, Chair, the committee report that's containing the formal amendments that the committee requested us to prepare. We've done that. The second document is the memorandum on the objects of the bill. Because of the changes that were proposed by the committee, we need to change the objects memo and that's there for the committee's consideration again. So I'll kick off in a long title. Somebody, one of the members, brought to our attention the title. That's in the that's on page 2 of the bill, in the 7th line, expungement of incorrect itself, and we're proposing that it be changed to the correct spelling. Then the main clause, the main amendments are in clause 3. The crux of those amendments are item 4. Perhaps I should deal with that first, because the rest of the amendments in clause 3 are consequential in nature. So if we go to item 4, on the committee report on clause 3, it provides that says that on page 6, in line 8, after subsection 1, there is an insertion. So the, how that sub clause 2 will read is the Director General, Justice and Constitutional Development must, on receipt of the written application of the person referred to in subsection 1, issue a certificate of expungement directing that the criminal record of that person be expunged if the Director General is satisfied that the person applying for expungement complies with the criteria set out in subsection 1, unless the Director General is of the view that the expungement of a particular criminal record could bring the administration of justice into disrepute or would not be in the interests of justice, in which case he or she must refer the matter together with his or her reasons to the minister for a decision. And then a new subparagraph B, the minister must, on receipt of the matter referred to him or her by the Director General as provided for in paragraph A, issue a certificate of expungement directing that the criminal record in question be expunged if he or she is satisfied that the expungement of the criminal record would not bring the administration of justice into disrepute or would be in the interest of justice. And then, as I said, Chair, the rest of the amendments, items 1, 2, 3, and 5, and, 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6 are consequential. Allow me to go through those quickly as well. On page 5, item 1, on page 5 in line 17, it must read, where a court has imposed any of the following sentences on a person convicted of an offence, the criminal record of that person containing the conviction and sentence in question must, subject to paragraph B and C and subsection 2 and section 271 on the person's written application be expunged. And so it goes on. What we're proposing there is that it must be subject in line 17 must be must subject to paragraph B and subsection 2 and section 271B be expunged. We're proposing that the reference to paragraph C be removed because the committee requested us to remove paragraph C, which is later down on page 5 from line 52. Paragraph C, as was pointed out yesterday, deals with disqualification for expungement if a person has been convicted of firearms-related offence. And CISA very nicely yesterday pointed out why it would possibly be better to delete that at this stage. The department is going to launch a comprehensive investigation on expungement, and we can deal with that in that process. So that's why item 1 is there. on item 2 on Shaw's team, provides that on page 5 from line 52 to mid paragraph C, I've already made mention of that, paragraph C dealing with the Firearms Control Act, that paragraph is being deleted. Then item 3 on page 6 in line 3, after subsection 2 to insert an A. As I've indicated, subclause 2 on page 6 has been divided into two paragraphs, paragraph A and paragraph B. So then if we move on to item 5 on page 2 of the committee report, it provides that on page 7 in line 41, we omit the reference to 271B and we substitute it with 271B2A. And if we go there, on page 7 in line 41, see the consequential amendment. That's an amendment to proposed new section 271B. And that provides that the head of the Criminal Records Center must expunge the criminal record of a person if he or she is furnished with a certificate of expungement by the Director General of Justice as provided for in section 271B2. Now, because we're dividing section 271B2 into two paragraphs, A and B, we've got to make reference to that. The Director General will the Director General issues the certificate in terms of section 271B2A, whereas the Minister issues the certificate in contemplated in section 271B2B. So that is why we've got item 6 there. In a nutshell, I think that's what the amendment's about. Most of them are consequential in nature, and it's item 4 and item 3. Item 4 and item 2 that form the basis of the amendment that this committee requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Any other
I've collected.
No edition. I think it is from Kishan.
No, it was a advocate of mine, sensitizer about this thing, so
Chair, with your permission, I can just quickly follow on and do the object memo. That is also circulated, and the only amendments really are on page 4 of it. And for the committee's benefit, the underlined wording are what we propose to insert, and then the strike-throughs right at the bottom of the page are what we propose to delete. The underlined wording is really in line with the new substance 2. Where the minister plays a role and is given a discretion, and the words that are struck through are indicating the provisions that deal with the Firearms Act, the Firearms Control Act, have been deleted, so that's really straightforward.
Let me check if members want to engage the department in terms of the proposed amendment agreed upon yesterday. Any comments? No? Kathleen? Having said that, I want us to put out a vote on the thing. By the way, sister, remind me, we have gone through the motion.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we'll find out the motion. Thank you very much. I'll just make sure. The prior president is coming to meet the vote.
No, sir, I wasn't listening to you. Did we go through the motion? No, sir.
The motion
today,
yes.
Maybe we're still out there.
Move the motion of the liability of this bill to be passed. Thanks.
Honorable Mayor, is there a motion of disability? Can you try it again, Dara? So that if we can do it, so that we at least be sure that
I will second that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fondamara, for seconding that they were dropped the most of the liability.
Okay.
That indicates that it is desirable for us as this committee and parliament to pass this legislation. All right, having done that, colleagues, I want us to go to our floor now. The preamble has amended the preamble. I'm going to give it a name. It's Mkhalipi's preamble. Yes, Honorable Mkhalipi's preamble, because remember that all of us, the whole parliament missed it, but he was able to pick it up. Given the office of the state advisor, after having assured me that they have gone through it and they have been fired. But Mkhalipi came in with a hammer. Just to put on the report from the department, they are also addressing that as well, that going to be corrected. Is the claim of part of the bill?
A long title.
The long title.
The long title.
It's part of the thing.
Yes.
Yeah. That one, I think I will take it as a corrected. Clause 1. Any discussion on clause 1? Attention if I missed some clauses where we amended.
That nothing says, even the complicated spelling of expansion.
They said it okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On that note, thank you for the wonderful engagement. Yeah. Keep going to stay here and enjoy being with us, but only if you can sit and relax, enjoy our meeting. But if you feel that you want to go, you're welcome to this. Thank you very much. In the future, let's do that. Thank you. Before they leave, before you leave, Dr. Panyel, do you want to address the committee?
Okay, just one remark. Just particularly the audiovisual matters arrangement regarding postponement, I think that is one of the client often has to bear the expenses of having his attorney in court just for a postponement. While these things could have been done on much on a much easier and much cheaper way, I think this will be welcomed by all practitioners and also by their clients regarding cost. This is a very good arrangement.
No, I'm not off the hook yet, but I didn't even make a mistake. There's one big attempt to Yeah, we're far ahead. We're ahead of things. Oh, just about to release.
We were just about to run.
So. I thought you. I can also take your stuff too, but you're supposed to call me to say, speak all about that idea. And was that the first debate? What the doctor said about
that? Thank you very much. And I think this is the beginning, only the beginning. We're going to be using this sort of these sort of facilities on a bigger scale as we're getting to that. Before any deals with demands and unopposed bail applications, but I think we're going to build on this once the success has been proved, and we're going to use it on a much wider scale.
Yeah, yesterday
the
evening I
met
Comrade Novello raised some issues there. The first thing is that was raised by. Yes. I remember that we are now going to discuss, get us to write a briefing about the JM. Yes. That was before
Chairman, and I want to find out about this parliament or what your vision is. But it has never taken. We don't know whether the resources are there. This is my matter.
We heard what Mohammed said yesterday, that money has been put aside to roll out to, I think he said 46 courts. To roll this out. It's already in operation, and as the committee members heard yesterday, it seems to be working very well. So money has specifically already been put aside for this, and what this bill will do is to facilitate this rollout now that the legislation will be in place.
Working in PD. Abel Mac. Working in PD.
Yeah.
My PD. All the
time. That wasn't PD. I think it was quite itself. That's where the pilot project was on.
He said it didn't work. Because I'm ready to take the initial message a bit. Let me, in the second round, welcome the department. Can you take us through this bill again? Yesterday you said this is one of the best straightforward bills. I want to see if it is the case. What do you want?
Thank you. I've done the talking for the morning. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to ask you either to take us through the board chair. I've done my share. But I'd say I can just point out that I think that the object memo from this bull is very comprehensive and it sets up really what needs to be said. I might just also draw attention to the fact that this is a reprint. There might be a question why this is a reprint. What happened during the finalization of the bill in the portfolio committee, we had some glitches with the printers, and not all the mistakes that we picked up when we did the proof had been picked up. So that was arranged that these corrections be moved from the floor in the National Assembly during the second reading debate. That's what in fact happened. There were only five little, and they were really not big problems, but they were picked up from the floor, and that's why we have a reprint. But I'll hand over to Teresa. Thank you.
Okay. So the bill amends 15 acts of parliament that are administered by the Department of Justice. Normally, a judicial matters amendment bill contains amendments that are straightforward and not complex, and that do not need individual amendment bills. The problems addressed in the amendment, or rather the bill addresses a problem that have emanated in practice and are now being sought to be rectified by this amendment bill. Clause 1 of the bill deals with an amendment to Section 113 of the General Law Amendment Act, which criminalizes the act of disposing of a body of the child with an intention of disposing or with the intention of concealing the birth of the child, regardless of whether the child died before, after, or during birth. It has been argued that the provisions of the Section 113 are overly broad and lacking in definition, and that they might not pass the constitutional scrutiny. It has been further argued that the provisions impair or violate the dignity of women who are charged in under this section. Therefore, clause 1 addresses the evidentiary burden that's contained in section 113. As a protection mechanism, the clause requires the Director of Public Prosecutions to authorize a prosecution under this section for where a person has been charged with concealment of birth. Clause 2 of the bill seeks to amend Section 88 of the Administration of Estates Act, which deals with the payment of interest on certain monies held in guardian funds. Currently, the interest on monies held in guardian funds is only payable at the end of the financial year, which is on the 31st of March of every year. And this method of making interest available only at the end of the financial year has been argued to be prejudicial to persons in whose favor money is kept in the guardian fund. Now, the amendment proposes that the interest be payable on monthly basis, and this will bring the calculation of interest into line with a method used by commercial institutions. The department has also developed an electronic system which will make the calculation of interest on a monthly basis possible and easy. And to this, the Master's Office has pointed out that the making interest available to the beneficiaries at any time will ensure that the interest is in line with the Public Investment Commissioner's method, and will also assist in the early detection and prevention of fraud. Also, the interest is on monies held in trust is currently determined by the Minister of Finance, and because the Master's Office resides under the functional responsibility of the Minister for Justice, the amendment also seeks to bring an amendment in so that the interest is determined by the Minister of Justice. The amendment also effects a technical amendment to the Act in order to bring the Act into line with the Mental Health Act, Care Act, because the Act still refers to a term lunatic, which has been found to be undesirable. Clause 3 to the bill contains a technical amendment in that it does correct a term in the Afrikaans version of the Medicines and Related Substances Act. Now coming to clause 4 of the bill also is technical in that it corrects a reference to an act. An amendment is effected there to the act. The Criminal Procedure Act still refers to the Prisons Act, whereas it should be the Correctional Services Act of 1998. So that has been corrected there. Clauses 4 to 5 of the bill deal with amendments to the Criminal Procedure Act dealing with admission of guilt crimes. And the amendments, they amend Section 55, 56, 57, and 57A of the Criminal Procedure Act. The crux of the amendment being contained in Clause 7 of Section 57, that amends Section 57 of the Act. Currently, the Criminal Procedure Act of Section 57 specifically allows prosecutors and clerks of the court, as well as peace officers, to set admission of guilt fines where they, on reasonable ground, believe that the court on convicting the person will not impose a fine exceeding the amount determined by the minister. And because what happens is that the minister sets amounts, admission of guilt amounts, and then the magistrates in their respective areas will then set admission of guilt fines against the ceiling of the amount determined by the minister. And where the magistrate has not determined the amount, the prosecutor may assert the admission of guilt fine, provided it does not exceed the amount determined by the minister. Peace officers do not have this discretion and can only set admission of guilt fine to an extent of the determination made by the minister. The problem with these provisions is that different admission of guilt fines exist in different parts of the country, and this gives rise to uncertainty. The other thing is that the admission of guilt regime is intended to keep minor cases out of court, and a concern has been raised that this provision is not being utilized to its full potential. A further concern has been raised that there's a clash for where the judiciary has to determine the admission of guilt, in that the okay, and then Section 9 of the Constitution guarantees the everyone protection, equal protection of the law. Now the provision has been said to infringe on the principle of separation of powers, because members of the judiciary are allowed to make law, which is a legislative function. The amendments proposed in clauses 4, rather, 5, 8, 17, and 9, and 39 of the bill, provide that admission of guilt may only be set by the minister in respect of less serious offences. And the amendment proposes that the minister sets out the offences in respect of which admission of guilt is payable, as well as the amount. And this, the determination that the minister will make under the amendment will be done in consultation with the Chief Justice, the National Director of Public Prosecution, as well as the Minister for Safety and Security. The power of the magistrates as members of the judiciary to make determinations is being repealed, as well as the powers of the clerk of the court to set admission of guilt. The amendments contained in 7, 8, and or clause 6, 8, and 17 are consequential in nature, as well as those contained in clause 39, because the crux of the amendments are just what I've been mentioning, and are in respect of section 57 of the Act. Clause 9 of the bill amends section 60 of the Criminal Procedure Act by empowering a court, if it has come to a conclusion that the accused can be released on bail because it is satisfied that the interest of justice permits so, to hold a further inquiry to determine the ability of the accused to pay the sum of the money that the court intends setting as admission of guilt. The aim of this clause is to alleviate the problem of overcrowding that is experienced in correctional facilities. And it is argued that if the court has come to a conclusion that the accused can be released on bail, then the court should then make it or make it easy for the accused or facilitate the release of such person in or on bail. Further, the clause amends the provisions relating to the payment of a bail. Currently, the bail may only be paid at the court where the case is registered or the case against that the accused person is registered. And it may happen that a third party wants to pay bail for the accused, and that person may not necessarily be based in the area of the court. Because the Department of Justice has now an electronic system by which all the courts in the country are linked, the amendments are to subsection 13 of the section 60 dealing with bail, proposes that bail be paid at any magistrate court in the country or at any high court. Coming to clause 10, clause 10 seeks to amend section 79 of the Criminal Procedure Act. Section 79 regulates the assessment of persons who are charged with serious offenses and whose mental capacity needs to be assessed. And currently the section provides that such a person should be assessed by a panel of three psychiatrists. Problems have arisen with the implementation of this section because of the or lack of a private psychiatrist who are willing to perform the assessment, because one of the psychiatrists has to be a private psychiatrist. Now the amendment gives the court a discretion to depart from the requirement that the accused be assessed by a panel of three psychiatrists, and to allow a panel of only two psychiatrists when required so by the prosecutor on request and in accordance with directives issued by the National Director of Prosecution. The directives by the issued by the Director of Public Prosecutions will require to be submitted to Parliament, and the NDPP has to develop those directives in consultation with the minister. Coming to clause 11, which also seeks to amend the Criminal Procedure Act, the clause confers jurisdiction on South African courts to try offences committed by South African officials while on diplomatic duty abroad in certain circumstances. Currently, such officials cannot be prosecuted abroad because of the diplomatic immunity that such persons enjoy. Clause 12 also amends the Criminal Procedure Act, Section 285 thereof. And it empowers the court to reconsider a sentence of periodical imprisonment where a person appearing before it has failed to report for periodical imprisonment. Because currently, there is a mechanism for dealing with a person who has failed to report initially for periodical imprisonment, but there is no mechanism to deal with a person who initially reports for periodical imprisonment but fails to report for subsequent imprisonment. Clause 13 to 16 of the bill also amends section, also amend the Criminal Procedure Act, to be precise, section 309C, 315, and 316 of the Criminal Procedure Act. And these, the proposed amendments emanate from the Constitutional Court decision in the case of Singer versus the state and others. Currently, when a person appeals, it is not necessary that a full bench hears the appeal, and also, you know, the appeal may be heard in chambers, and the full record of the appeal is not required. The Constitutional Court in that case, the Singer case, held that the appeal, criminal appeals must be heard in an open court, and that the full trial, the full record must be presented to the trial court. Clauses 18 and 19 of the bill contain amendments relating to the Attorneys Act. Clause 18 amends section 3 of the Attorneys Act. The anomaly that is being corrected there is that the Attorneys Act envisages attorneys employed at the Legal Aid Board engaging candidate attorneys. This section justified by the definition that of a principal that is contained in the Attorneys Act, because that definition defines a principal in relation to a candidate attorney as an attorney who is employed full-time at a law clinic or an office of the Legal Aid Board. But the Section 3 of the Attorneys Act omitted the attorneys employed at the Legal Aid Board as principal. And that is the purpose of Clause 18, to rectify this omission. Clause 19 amends Section 72 of the Act. This Section 72 provides for fines that may be imposed by the Council of a Law Society on attorneys found guilty of unprofessional conduct. The amendment proposes to increase fines from 10,000 to 100,000 in the case of attorneys, and 2,000 to 20,000 in the case of candidate attorneys. The need to adjust this fine has been necessitated by the fact that the fines were last adjusted 15 years ago in 1993. Coming to clause 20 of the bill, clause 20 deletes section 3, subsection 9 of the Admiralty Jurisdiction Regulation Act of 1993. This section gives the Minister of Justice powers which are argued to be arbitrary to exclude certain ship owners from the provisions of the or from the application of the Act. The section 3 of that of the Admiralty Jurisdiction Regulation Act allows a claimant in a maritime claim to arrest an associated ship in order to found and to found jurisdiction, and the ship that is arrested does not necessarily have to be the ship that gave rise to the maritime claim. And this practice is an international practice. For example, an associated ship includes a ship other than the ship that gave rise to the maritime claim, but it must belong to the same company of the ship, for example, that is being arrested. This provision was enacted during the previous constitutional dispensation, where an attempt was made to circumvent the sanctions that were being imposed on South Africa at the time. And the amendments contained in the bill are intended to bring the provisions into line with the constitutional requirement that everyone is equal before the law and is entitled to equal protection and benefits of the law. Clause 21 of the bill also emanates from a decision of the Constitutional Court in the case of Van der Merwe versus the Road Accident Fund. The clause proposes to amend section 18, subsection B of the Matrimonial Property Act of 1984. This section 18 permits a spouse married in community of property to recover damages from the other spouse in respect of bodily injuries caused by that spouse, but not damages for patrimonial loss. The court found this section to be infringing on the equality provision of the Constitution and without any justification, and the court ordered that the patrimonial damages must become the separate property of the injured spouse, which the injured spouse is entitled to recover. Clause 22 of the bill contains amendments relating to Part 1 of Schedule 2 of the Criminal Law Amendment Act of 1997. Clause 23 to 26 seeks to amend the Debt Collectors Act and the sections that are being amended there, or rather that clause 2023 aims to increase the number of executive committee members of the council from 3 to 5, and the debt collector council requested this amendment to increase the members so that the council can, you know, effectively discharge its mandate. Clause 25 gives the Council for Debt Collectors power to take control and administer and finalize a debt collector trust fund in specified circumstances, and where there's a reason to believe that the debt collector is likely to have his resignation withdrawn. The Master of the High Court is also empowered to require payment from a curator before a curator is appointed to administer that the trust. Clause 27 and 28 of the bill contain amendments relating to the Promotion of Access to Information Act. In terms of Section 79 of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, the Rules Board for Court of Law must make certain rules of procedure. And the amendment contained in Clause 27 is intended to extend the statutory period within which the rules and this is in Section 79 must be made. The amendment also inserts a wording similar to that contained in the Rules Board for Court of Law Act, in terms of which rules of court are made with the approval of the minister. And this is intended to eliminate any uncertainty that exists currently regarding the making of rules. Section 79 of the same act, the Promotion of Access to Information, provides that a person exercising a power or performing a duty in terms of the act is indemnified from any criminal or civil liability if the act that a person is doing is done in good faith, such as the clerks of the court who assist members of the public in filling in the forms. The Act also includes regulations made under the Act, but does not include the rules made under the Act. Amendments proposed in Clause 28 extend this indemnity to cases where court personnel assist members of the public to comply with the rules as well. Clause 29 to 30, or rather 29, 30, and 31, including 32, contain amendments relating to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Clause 29 of the Bill extends the statutory deadline, which sets a time period within which the Rules Board for Court of Law must make rules relating to judicial review. It also inserts a wording that is similar to the Rules Board for Court of Law, which, in terms of which the rules are made with the approval of the minister. Clause 30 extends a statutory deadline by when the Code of Good Administrative Conduct must be made and published, and the date has been set to February 2009. Clause 32 contains technical amendments relating to amendments relating to Section 11 of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, correcting a citation to the short title to the Act. Section 33 of the bill amends, or clause 33 amends Section 33 of the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act of 2000 in order to ensure that members of the Equality Review Committee established under that Act who hold public office and who already receive remuneration package from the fiscus only receive remuneration for their services, that is, allowances, and not a remuneration package over and above the remuneration package that they receive in respect of the public office they hold. Clause 34 amends Section 7 of the Judges Remuneration and Conditions of Employment Act of 2001. In terms of that act, a judge who is discharged from active service and is not yet 75 years old must, when required to do so, perform a service for 3 months every year. And a judge may also volunteer to perform more than 3 months if this is requested from him. Judges older than 75 years of age may also perform the service, and such voluntary service may only be performed after consultation with the Judicial Service Commission. And if the head of the relevant court has requested and the minister has approved the engagement of such a judge. The amendment contained in the bill therefore requires that only the approval of the minister where the head of the court requests, and in situation where additional temporary posts are created on the establishment of a particular court to deal with additional backlog. The requirement to consult with the Judicial Service Commission, which only sits twice a year, has necessitated this amendment, because having to wait that long frustrates the efforts to address backlog. It also needs to be pointed out that the amendment will only be applied in cases where a temporary judicial post has been created and not in respect of a permanent judicial post, where there might be concerns that the up-and-coming judges are blocked from entering into the system by the old or by the retired judges. Clause 35 of the bill contains amendments relating to the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act of 2004. At present, Magistrates Court Act limits the lower court of, that is, a district court, to imposing sentence of imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years and to a fine not exceeding 60,000 rand. While at the same time, magistrate court have jurisdiction under the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Practices Activities Act, and the penalties provided for in that act exceed the punitive jurisdiction of magistrate court. That is the 60,000 and the 3 years mentioned. In terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Practices Act, the penalties amount to imprisonment for a maximum of 5 years and a fine of up to 250,000 rand, and a fine equal to 5 times the value of the gratification involved in the offence. And the proposed amendment to this act is intended to make it clear that the magistrate court has power to impose penalties in excess of their jurisdiction as provided for in the Magistrate Court Act. Clause 36 and 38 of the, or 36, 37 and 38 contain amendments to the Sexual Offences Act of 2007. These three clauses are all interrelated, and they seek to amend or to extend the statutory deadline by when the policy, the National Register of Sex Offenders, and should be put in place, as well as for the national or the policy to be submitted to Parliament. The need for the extension has been necessitated by the fact that the register or the establishment of the register is taking longer than anticipated, and that the department is, together with other stakeholder departments, are hard at work putting this register, as well as the development of policy guideline in place, and hence the need for the extension of the deadline. And that's about the bill chairperson.
Thanks. Without any more time, let me check if there are comments. I can see Honorable West is ready to take kick off. Honorable Zizi, Honorable Khalifi, in that order.
Thanks, Chase. If you might be excused, we've got to go to a caucus meeting. They're going to decide how many buses we've got to hire to go to your cocktail at 6:30. Chair, on the rhythm of life tonight. Seeing I won't be, I'm just jumping around a bit. I just want to know one thing from Justice Department. Under Section 21, I think it's 20, or the 20 Section 3, this is to do with the ship. They refer you to a maritime claim where they will arrest the ship of an associate ship. In Queen's English, Chair, you don't arrest a ship. You can't put handcuffs on the ship. You can arrest the crew, you can arrest the cook, you can arrest the engineer, but you seize a ship or you impound the ship. I'm just asking, maybe it is a legal terminology, I don't know.
Thank you.
Or attach.
Yeah.
This indeed has actually been a marathon explanation, and I don't think, I must admit, I don't think I understood what was going on. Being subject of Bantu education, probably, they have to pardon me. I ran out of questions because I did not follow exactly what is happening. And probably if one reads it again slowly, one may understand. On page 3, there's really big words there that I would like to explain, maybe somebody can explain to you. That is now on amendment of section 88, the last line there. There are about 3 words. If I may pronounce it, it's use of factuary, fiduciary, and commissary. I don't know what it means. Money. I don't know. But education. Now, real world says I did not follow what's going on. And then pardon my ignorance. Now, let's go to 30. I'll have to read it on page 30. The substitute of section 18 of Act 1984. I'm completely lost. You know, it speaks of certain damages from community recovering from other parts. I don't know here who here. Why should cover from me or I should cover from that? I'm just completely lost. That is the section that I thought I would understand it, but it says, either than damages for matrimonial losses. Oh, I'm not hearing. Can you pardon me? I don't know. I try to follow. The whole thing is just got me confused. Those are the things that probably I can ask at this stage, but in fact, the time I read it probably then I'll understand what is going on.
Thanks, Chairperson. First, Chairperson, when I looked yesterday at this bill, I just got a shiver down my back, Chair. You know, when you read to me Act 51 of 1977, I remember many of these laws came about after Black October in 1977. And you know what Black October means. It means you could be detained just because you were reading a newspaper that was fiction at the time. Some of us were detained just for reading and keeping copies of the then world newspaper. Yes. And the New Nation, yes. But yes, Chair. Chair, some would be what I'm saying, just questions and informal clarification. Chair, in clauses 6 and 7 talks about fines, admission of gifts, fines. I'm wondering, Chair, because, you know, among others, this is included, I suppose, here, the admission of the fine for traffic offenses. When I talk of speeding fines, I'll get many people. But, Chair, in this regard, I wonder what are the administrative checks and balances, the safeguards. You know, Chair, you receive this notice
via the maze, the gate, when you drove through Bloemfontein from Cape Town, you were driving at 140 instead of 150. You duly sent, you post the file. But rarely do you receive a receipt. They never acknowledge receipt of text. In some instances, you get another reminder that you have not paid. But you only produce the slip, the register of the registered item, say, hey, I did send this thing. But yeah. But what is most troubling? Some other times you'll be confronted with a roadblock looking for people who have not paid this fine. And your name will be appearing as those people for whom warrant of arrest has been issued. But you know you paid. So it's a very tricky situation. So I'm just checking, it might not be contained here, relevantly, but there is a real concern for administrative failures in the regard or challenges. The same would also be holding for that section where it says a bail may be paid at any magistrate court or high court in the country. We've traveled the length and breadth of this country, driving also just to go to the particular police station or magistrate court to pay a fine for a relative or friend. How will this be arranged? I can now pay, after this is passed, not a fine as such, but bail. Yes. I can pay a bail for my relative who's being detained in Mabopane and pay here in Cape Town. How will be this arrangement be smooth act? Chair, periodical imprisonment, how does it differ from compulsory community service? Is it the same thing? Can I get clarity on that? Clause 19, Chair, the increase of fines. Why this huge increase of fines? Some of these, I think it's more than 500%, up to 1,000%. I understand to say they have not been adjusted for a long time. The jump from an increase of 500%, 1,000% in a fine. Is it because there is an increase of those offenses or what? What is the reason? No, we can't talk of inflation when we talk about the judicial matter. Clause 11, Chair. An accused person can be deported back to the country for prosecution. What does that mean? Does it mean that if somebody is abroad and commits an offense in that country, will be immediately brought back to this country to face prosecution? I need you to understand. Chair, you'll pardon me, some of these things I've got personal interaction with them. The charges, I just lost the relevant clauses, but it's debt collector's charges. I've had a situation in my constituency where a former student owed a university a loan of 10,000 rand. And this poor pupil has got temporary work. He pays, each time he pays, these people charge 10% of the amount that he disbursed. And I'm told it's legally so. If he pays at a rate of 1,000 rand per month, it means the debt collector will take 10% of the 1,000 rand that is paying. So initially now, the capital sum that is paying where will it end? I'm told this is within the confines of the law. But don't we need to have a relook on this?
Not in the
Chair. Chair, clause 36. The national register for sexual offenders. Among the victims, I understand to say underage victims. But why should we include elderly people, elderly and infirm people, those people who could happen to be easy victims to sexual offenders? Or is it included? I didn't get it. The last one, check. Clause 39. I'm reading the words, I'm trying to understand, but it's above me. Can I have an illustration of what is meant in clause 39? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. At least someone was able to follow the discussion.
No, thank
you. You can see from the question. I think you can now try to, you'll get there as time goes on. Any other questions? Can we get the responses for now? Stop right now?
Not now.
Okay.
Many questions here.
Okay.
Yes, Brother. Thank you, Chair. Rectorship is certainly a legal term that's used in terms of maritime legal terminology, and that's used, I think, quite often in that Act and Admiralty Jurisdiction Act. Usufructuary and today commissary and the other words there, that's in the law of trust, and I have an idea of what they are, but I'd just like to get some documentation to come and confirm what they actually mean. Maybe Kalila can help me here, but I will get back to you on that. Usufructuary, a person has a usufruct over land. If land belongs, and I'm just using an example, land belongs to somebody, but another person has a usufruct over that piece of land, or portion of that land. You can walk over the land or something like that. And the usufructuary is the person that has that right over that. And fidei commissary and the other term is in similar line, but I think they are pretty interrelated, and I don't want to get the terminology wrong. I think I last dealt with that when I was at university, which was about 30 years ago, but that's what it's about, and I will certainly get back to you on that. Clause 18, just an easy question. This only relates to marriages that are in community of property, and as I think we all know, marriages in community of property, there's one estate and you share it. It's a joint estate, it's shared by the husband and wife. And the law at the moment, if the husband, let's say, because that's normally what the case is, injures the wife and they're married in community of property, the wife could claim damages from the husband for bodily injury, but couldn't claim damages for patrimonial loss, instance loss of earnings or something along those lines. And the Constitutional Court has come and said, on the strength of our equality clause, there's just no justification why a wife who has been injured by her spouse can't also claim patrimonial damages. For loss of earnings and that sort of thing. So the Constitutional Court has said the law must be changed. It infringes on the right to equality, because if you happen to be married, I think in terms of and with an international contract, you would be able to claim that. But now that the Constitutional Court said in no uncertain terms that such spouse has been injured by her husband and they're married in community as a property and there's only a joint estate, that spouse is also, besides bodily damages for bodily injury, can also claim damages for patrimonial loss, and that those damages will not go into the joint estate, but will become the property, the separate property of the wife, notwithstanding that the fact that they married in kin community of property. And to get on to Ms. Karika's admission of guilt finding and the traffic offences, I think Sarah hit the nail on the head there, that the concerns that you're raising are really not dealt with in the provisions that we're amending at the moment. What's in these provisions, as Teresa said, all we are trying to amend here is that at the moment the minister determines the ceiling amount for admission of guilt fines, and that magistrates, their power, chief magistrates have a power at the moment to determine what admission of guilt fines will be valid in their magisterial districts. Now what this bill is suggesting, that we take that power away from magistrates to determine what the fines will be in those magisterial districts. There should be, and as Teresa mentioned, what we're trying to strive for here is uniformity throughout the country, that you don't have magistrates in Johannesburg determining what fines will be for, let's say, speeding, and you have a magistrate in the Wetzdorf who determines very, very different admission of guilt fines for the same offence. The equality clause again comes into play. Everybody should be treated equally before the law. And as Teresa also mentioned, is that the question has been raised, and I think quite correctly, should magistrates be legislating? That's what it boils down to. Legislating on what fines should be is a legislative and an executive function. And so that's the crux of these amendments. That's what we're trying to change. But to get back to what Mr. Kalipi is saying, is also there are certain safeguards in Section 57. Any admission of guilt fine that is paid, if you have a look on page 6 of the bill, right at the bottom, subsection 9, all admission of guilt fines that are paid, and wherever they're paid, must be sent, and I'm sure Mr. Mzizi will remember that as well, they go back to the court, and the magistrate's got to go through each and every fine and ratify admission of guilt fine, and it goes into what is called a criminal admission of guilt register. I think that the magistrate takes the papers that have been received and checks them to make sure that that is in accordance with the administration of justice. The warrant of arrest and all those sort of things, and really we're not touching on here, we're really not dealing with that in the provisions that we are amending. And as Teresa said, what the big change is taking away the power of the magistrates to determine fines in their magisterial district, and for the minister to determine the offences which qualify for admission of guilt, because in theory at the moment, the way that the law stands, admission of guilt fines can be given for anything, in theory, murder, for instance. Not that that happens in practice, but the amendments are proposing that the minister determines in consultation or after consultation with the role players that are mentioned there, which fines will qualify for admission of guilt fines, and what they will be and what those fines will be throughout the country, so that you don't have these differences throughout the country. The evidence that we have, and Teresa touched on that as well, is because of all this austerity and so many different fines being valid in different parts of the country, nobody really knows what the fines are. And what is happening is that people are being arrested and brought to court for petty cases which they could have actually got admission of real fines. If the law enforcement agencies, the police officers, did that, rather than arresting them and bringing them to court. So I think it has a positive spin-off, but it doesn't deal with the issues that are raised by that have been raised. services coming and that sort of thing, like I said, there are provisions elsewhere that deal with services coming. They must be served on a person who's older than 16 years at the place of residence of the accused, for instance. But we really are not, we're not dealing with those issues in this court. On clause 9, pay anywhere, the bail, as Teresa mentioned, at the moment, in terms of the law, you as an accused person or somebody who's a, or the accused person's family member can only pay the bail money that's being set at the magistrate's court where the accused person is. If there have been huge IT developments in the department which will now enable fines to be paid at any court. So you might have, you might be sitting in Johannesburg and fine has, and bail has been set, but the person that can pay that fine is a parent that's sitting in Cape Town. The parent now in Cape Town can go to the Cape Town Magistrates Court, and the systems are now capable of dealing with that, and fine can be paid in Cape Town for the person sitting in, for the person sitting in Johannesburg. So I think it's a positive, a very positive aspect. We were requested at a late stage in the preparation of this bill to put this in the small amendment, but it's going to, I think it's going to have a very positive signal. The increase of the fines in terms of the Attorneys Act, I think there might be a point, I think the point was correctly made, it does look like a hefty increase, but the request has come from the Law Society of South Africa. These, Teresa, I think, mentioned that these were last adapted, I think, in 1993, and the law, the legal profession is arguing that they, people that, the attorneys that are convicted of misconduct, and I must just make the point that these attorneys aren't convicted in a court of law, these are disciplinary cases within the attorney's profession. If they are convicted of misconduct, they can, an attorney can be fined up to 10,000, and it's now been suggested that if they're up to 100,000, and the argument, and I think the motivation there is that attorneys, you know, this really doesn't, this is the attorney does feel the sanction. And it must be something that is, you know, is going to be deterrent in nature, so that the public, at the end of the day, is protected. Clause 11, that deals with jurisdiction in respect of offences committed by persons outside the Republic. This is an amendment that was requested by the Department of Foreign Affairs. I think a little while back you might have seen in the press that there have been cases where officials doing diplomatic duty have been lawful while they've been abroad, and they've committed offences there, and because of diplomatic immunity they can't be charged there. And they come back, they're not called back to South Africa immediately, but they eventually come back from their service. And they're not prosecuted. They get away with these offences with impunity. So this was requested by the Department of Foreign Affairs. When the person eventually does come back, that person can be charged for the offence that he or she has committed while abroad. It has to be, there are safeguards there. No prosecution may be instituted against such a person when he comes back to South Africa unless the offence is also offence in South Africa and unless the NDP instructs that a prosecution be instituted. So there is that very high level oversight, none other than the NDP who's going to authorise the institution of a prosecution in those circumstances. This was also cleared with the NDP, the NDP's office, the NPA, and both the NPA and Department of Foreign Affairs are adamant that a provision of this nature is necessary. So while we're here, I don't know if I see Mr. Kishana sitting here and thought he was going to come and just listen, but he could possibly also, he was behind this amendment that I was telling the committee about on the payment of bail money. So if the committee members would like to hear more information, Mr. Sasana is the person to tell you about it. Debt collectors was also mentioned by Mr. Pelletti. Again, and I understand what he's getting at, the amounts that are charged by debt collectors. Often those amounts are charged outside the law, and we need to, and that's why an act like the Debt Collectors Act is so important, because that act sets out what debt collectors are by law allowed to charge. And I'm afraid that I think there are lots of debt collectors out there that don't work within the parameters of the law. And the amendments that we've got there are, if you have a look at the one, actually deals with, and I'm not too sure Teresa didn't deal with that in any detail, it's clause 23. Indirectly it has a bearing, clause 23 deals with or provides that members of the Council for Debt Collectors who have been appointed as members of disciplinary committee to discipline debt collectors that have gone outside the law. These members of the council, they constitute your disciplinary committees. And what the Act doesn't provide for, and what we're doing here, is that when the Council for Debt Collectors' term of office expires, those people leave, and they might be sitting with part-heard cases, disciplinary cases. So all we're trying to do in clause 23 is to amend the Debt Collectors Act so that, notwithstanding the expiry of the term of office of members of the Council for Debt Collectors, they remain in office, finish their part-heard cases. And the Debt Collectors Council term of office, I think, expires at the beginning of next year. So in preparation for that, you don't want to have part-heard cases. The evidence that was placed before us is that some of the part-heard cases have run over months and months and months, and have cost lots of money. And you don't want those having to start from scratch because the Council for Debt Collectors office term of office has expired. So that's what we're trying to do there. But the issues that Mr. Cleef is talking about are issues that we possibly need to have a look at, but they're not actually contained in the amendments that we do with them. Towards the end of the bill, the Sexual Offences Act, there, Teresa pointed out, those three provisions are intended to just give the department and the other role-playing departments a little bit more space to establish the register, the sexual offences register. A lot of work has already been done. I'm informed that the department is working very closely with, for instance, the NGO sector in getting the sex offenders register up and running. And there's consensus there, rather than do it properly by giving an extra 3 months to do it properly, then try and have it established when we are not quite ready. The question there was raised, what about the Sexual Offences Act deals with sexual offences against children and sexual offences against mentally disabled persons. Sexual Offences Act contains provisions of sexual offences against the general community, but because of the particular vulnerability of disabled persons and small children, there's a separate chapter, and I'm sure some committee members might remember when the Sexual Offences Act came through this house. There's two chapters, one dealing with sexual offences against mentally disabled persons, and one dealing against sexual offences against young children. And that's because of their particular vulnerability. I'm trying to think back, because I think that question was actually raised during the parliamentary process, but what about the elderly people? I can't remember the argument, but I think it was because of these people's particular vulnerability, they need special protection. Elderly people will fall under the general protection that is afforded by the Sexual Offences Act. And then coming to clause 39, that's the transition provision, and it relates to the admission of gilt funds. We're changing the regime, or we're proposing that the regime of admission of gilt funds be changed. But you might have cases where admission of gilt funds have been imposed at the time of that change. And this transitional provision is trying to make provision for that scenario. So if you get as the provision says, any admission of guilt which before the commencement of the other provision was imposed and has not been dealt with in terms of section 57, those that fall in the cracks must be dealt with as if this law hadn't been passed. So basically it means the old regime continues if you're halfway through the process. And once all those have been dealt with, then you will continue. You will deal with admission of guilt fines in the proposed in the way that the bill proposes admission of guilt fines be dealt with. I think there was another question on community service and periodic imprisonment. I don't have that information. What's the difference? Periodic imprisonment, I'm not sure. I just need to consult with my colleagues on that. Periodic imprisonment is where you go to prison for set periods, weekends for instance. I just don't think community service is mentioned in the Criminal Procedure Act as a sentencing option. I'm looking at Mr. Swissana. I don't think community service is a sentencing option. That is mentioned in the Criminal Procedure Act where periodic imprisonment is a sentencing option. Community service. Maybe Mr. Spassani can help me there too. But it's not a sentencing option.
And there is no actual imprisonment involved with community service, whereas with periodical imprisonment there is.
Are you done, Emma?
Yeah, I think I've dealt with all the questions that aren't
Yeah, welcome to Mrs. Kosan. A short story. Yeah, I go close to the mic. Yeah, I'm going to say something. During on Saturday, I attended a meeting where the ANC president, Comrade David, addressed all traditional leaders in the province, in Mpumalanga. And there were only three apologies. All of them were there, in that meeting on Saturday morning. During the meeting, among other things, they raised an issue to say, Mr. President, we were consulted and we have made input into a bill in Parliament. But we don't hear anything about it now. What's happening to this? Were you just teasing us as a ruling party that you want our views so that the thousands be able to be assist us? I'll tell you what that is. In his response, he said no, he was not aware that the bill has been passed or flipped. He will make sure that the dust is dusted out, the bill gets to the process again, it must pass before election. And I want this to convey to the minister that the ANC president committed the Minister of Justice to say that bill will have to pass before the election. Now, because he said he don't have any reason why it was packed and not considered it. That assurance he gave to his leaders, and they kept hands after that
respond by the president of the ANC. That bit is the traditional court bit. Traditional court bit. Our president of the movement, I am a member, has committed that there is no way that this can be passed unless someone talks to him directly. So certain people were so hate about it. And I'm saying, among other people. So in assisting Laura and responding to some of the questions here, you have to tell us where is that thing? Who has passed it? And why? Now when we campaign, because well, the problem is out there, we campaign and say, no, the president said it will be done. That's what we're going to do. And what's so hip about it? We tell our people we're going to campaign. That's it. The bin will be removed from the shelf. It will be continued before election.
Does it mean, Chair, in my layman's terms, understand that when this bill is passed into law, the amendment will mean that the so-called, what Honorable would call a bootleg list of fines that is held by traffic officers, these officers of the municipalities in terms of their bylaws, and by provincial officers in terms of their ordinance, will all these fall away? Only fines that under the national or the regional, because these other two are separate spheres of province and local government. Let's retain the list of funds in terms of their ordinances and bylaws. What will happen is that this happens.
You know, you are really laughing quite a room because it's a thing here. We're getting to a real debate now. Quite a real. That's a real debate. Now, you raise an issue about the debt collector. Now, the question that has to be answered is, how many people have been blacklisted because of this huge interest that imposed on people? Some of the kind of been not even allowed to buy on credit because of this huge interest imposed by debt collectors. No, because you're raising some serious issues now, I think. I want to enjoy this debate today.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I make a follow-up on my question of these damages being now covered from the South. Chairperson, what I know if people are married in a community of property, mine is half and half of mine. Now, should the circumstances arise where a person is injured, he claims from me what we have, it is a property. Let's make a house. We have got children. The house must be attached in order that it's sold so that you get the money. What about our children? I can see the two of them, the children. will be then affected. Furthermore, I think the presenter, the respondent, said whatever is claimed cannot go into the Buddha again, where, because it's in communal property, it's not had, it must come back in the same form. But now, yeah, the law says she can probably put it somewhere else, or I can put it somewhere else. Are we now on the division of estate already before divorce? What are we going to understand, and how are we going to interpret that law when it comes to that? And furthermore, if I go in the indigenous law, I am the head of the crop. Now, if she starts having her own property put somewhere else, what does it now mean in my own interpretation as an indigenous person? Or that has also, the chaplain spoke about the Amakosa. Because they have been sidelined right from the onset. They can no longer say anything that is contrary to these Western laws. Well, let's leave it at that. Let's come now to the admission of Bill 5, which I understood now it should be now uniformly cast. No person in Gauteng will have this admission of guilt and the other one somewhere else. We no longer are having those four provinces separate now. We have nine provinces which are one. Now, sir, if I may probably bring another aspect, I don't know whether this is in line with that. In the other section, that is another, in fact, select committee in the public sector. The DGs of the provincial and local government, I think Mr. Mpofu is free from that. But this is a traffic issue, where they are suggesting that the magistrate on speeding and where a person actually has been killed, the magistrate must be hard. They even suggest the amount that should be actually put on. My argument was that, how dare can you then prescribe to the magistrate what to do? In any case where the speeding or doesn't die, it must be, there's a charge, which will scale down from capital homicide, menswear, inconsiderable driving, reckless, and all that. And the magistrate cannot arrive at that precise point. Now, unfortunately, she is married to Mr. Dalin Pova. Said, did you ask your husband about this? What is his opinion? He said, he differs with me, like you. But now, when you say, if there to be that uniformity, are we now implying to have the same in any flatland? Where in some instances it's only 30 kilometers, and in some instances 60 kilometers in other areas. In other areas it's 80 kilometers, like here in the Evan area in Cape Town. Most of them is 80 kilometers. But how are you going to scale down these things and also the local thing? Because in the past we used to have a provincial fine, which people are so scared, by the creepy area, we have to look. And local things was easy. Now, are we going back now to the creepy area or what? Thank you.
Any other questions? Can you get responses, please?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, but the intention is that this is not only laws at the national level. You're going to be looking at provincial, you're going to have to be looking at provincial legislation, municipal legislation, and I hasten to add, it's going to be a massive exercise. But the intention is that there must be that uniformity for all laws. The minister will consult very, very widely, and there's going to have to be massive consultation for this at all levels of government. But the minister will determine the offences, number one, and the amounts, number two. And that brings me to this convening question, Chair, because we must also bear in mind that admission of guilt fines are only going to be in respect of really your less serious offences. You're not going to have the serious offences qualifying for admission of your fines. As I've said just now, the law in practice at the moment, in theory at the moment, has really allowed admission of your fines to be set for anything. So I think one of the positive signals is that, you know, for your more serious offences, there shouldn't be any question that you qualify for an admission of your fines. So it's going to be for your less serious offences. And it's not only going to be for traffic offences. I think mostly your traffic offences will play a big role. But in your common law offences, you know, your petty theft, possession of a small amount of dacha, those are all things that can also be considered when determining what offences will qualify for admission of guilt fines.
And on the other question by the honourable member, the question of having separate properties or dividing the estate before even at this stage, it is possible to have separate estates depending on the marital regime and on what you've set for yourself. So it's like it's something new, but in this specific amendment is in order to make sure that a person or a wrongdoer does not benefit from your own wrongdoing.
That's a very serious summary. But just allow us to come in. This is a very serious summary. The summary of summary.
Honourable Chair and Member, I came here to give moral support, not just as a job. But now that I've been put on the spot, I had to do so. Firstly, community service is a new concept. The old concept in terms of the judgment of this system, but was never part of our law. Our law is very positive in nature. It's focusing on punishment. Even the very same Black Artisan Act, which still applies in terms of the tertiary judge, it does not give them the authority to pass community sentences. It gives them to give compensatory fines, which are contributory in nature, but not compensatory in the nature that you understand it. So what we are trying to do is discuss bring those elements to be part of our law. And we say that this is currently happening across the globe because we realize that by building more prisons and putting people into prison, you're not actually solving the social evil. You are aggravating the situation also. So the Constitution Act, which was written in 1977, never had any element of community service. There are tribes now that are trying to create legislation that looks into that, and I think very soon this House will be basically getting some proposals of this set, amending some elements of the Constitution Act and also bringing new legislation will promote restorative justice and conservation as one of the means of dealing with some of the social evils, etc. So please look at that time. Now, the other aspect which Mr. Lawrence raised was with relation to the payment of bail at any other court. We know that what currently happens now is that people, when bail is granted on Friday at 2 o'clock, the law allows and expects me to go and pay bail where the person is arrested, is detained at the court, etc. So even if the parents are working in Johannesburg and there's a court near in Johannesburg and the child has been arrested in Limpopo, at Bulubeni, the further village where Morena will know better. If transport cannot allow the father to come in or to send money by any other means to pay at the court, it will mean that the person will only be released once and back at home. So what this law does is simply say, if a child, a relative, or somebody has been arrested anywhere in the country, and somebody with money is another part of the world, the person with money can go to a massive court in that part of the world and pay the people. The release processes will be sorted out between internally between the officials. which means then that there will be an SOS request, which will then be processed by the clerk of the court, of a case of a court in Cape Town, to the clerk of the court, of a court in Madubaduba or in Tanin, to release that person so that a warrant of liberation is processed and signed off from the other entity. It's basically to make to bring convenience, and also to make sure that the state is not burdened by persons in prison where bail has been given already, etc. It also requires a lot of checks and balances to make sure that corruptive elements are not coming to play, etc. And that's what the department is looking around, so those aspects out, etc. But the principle of the legislation is to make sure that bail can be paid anywhere in the country, wherever it has been given. We were in Singapore, so you'll understand that there they pay bail for 8 years. We're not even going to court. You just put your card and press a court and tell the amount. In the next few minutes, the necessary court of all information is released. We are not there yet. But we are trying to say, to the extent that it should help people, that can do that. It could help quite massive money in terms of what the state pays for one extra night of a person who should have been paid bail at the end of the day, etc. And just the last point, Honorable Chair, we have not published such a court bill. We drove it until to Parliament, and when we arrived here, it started moving at a slower pace. And yesterday, there was a meeting by the Portfolio Committee on Justice, and I think there are also initiatives being put to fast track the process. And just to say that this House will be consulted by the Portfolio Committee in terms of establishing a small committee that should be characterized some of the aspect concerns which were raised during the public hearings that were held in May this year. And part of the public hearings, without going to the matter, Consulto raised the point that committee sentencing is a new phenomenon. They want to go and review it because it appears as if it brings in an element of forced labor. If the international court says, because you've violated the community, on Saturday you must come and clean all the windows of the school, or your child has broken the window, so you must go and buy a window pane, replace the school, go away from the school, and make sure that you don't only clean the ones that are broken, you also make sure that you clean all the windows which are there. Because that said, you know, it could be coming with new phenomena, once you go and consolidate in terms of their own labor processes, whatever. We said, no one will check. You are sure that it's not part of what labor. Labor means employer and employee relationship, payment or non-payment, etc. That's not employer relationship. It's about making good what has been broken in terms of the community value. But we'll come back to the little democratic debate. Thank you.
Yeah. So I can phone Tikos Masamu, the chairperson of the province, that's the deal is the entree.
Yes.
Okay, I'll phone him. I'll also phone in Goyama, Makotong, and the court. Yes. Because all days in the Maos look at me and said, no, I'm part of. I just raised my hand, and the president laughed at me. I'm glad to inform that Teresa wants to come in to clarify what is because of the divorce before the entire divorce. But I think there's nothing interesting about it. Thank you, Susanna, for clarifying that. Yes, I am.
Chair, maybe we'll still come to this one, but I want to assist the chair in the question in reading now. It really long time. We've said to other people for a long time, this is a real long time. Chair, I think it's containing more than 10 laws, principal heads that is amended. I'm reflecting here on the last phrase of the long time, and to provide for matters connected therewith. is this phrase meant to be added to after every this was meant, or it applies only to the last of the situation in the long time? For instance, if we're saying here, the first one, at so and so, General Law Amendment Act of 1935, at the end of it, should we have added and to provide matters connected herewith? Or that phrase applies only to the last principal act that is mentioned in the principal act? I hope I'm clear what I'm asking. I just want to know that. I'm a lay person, I might be terrible mistake.
We are in the real debate now. I don't want to take.
Let me assure you, chapter 7, it's not a very substantial question. Chapter, you know, this is a very good piece of legislation given what Madam of what Mr. Sozana has referred to as the Singapore model. Singapore seems to be very advanced in technology. So when you get to that small country with less than 4 million people, well, that everybody can go in there. Something about that country, I don't know how it is. But, Chairman, you're not completely raising a question about the other piece of legislation that is being passed in another country. That has matters that relate to this one. I want to check first if there is discussion between the two departments to ensure that there is an alignment between the two departments to ensure that there is an amendment, I mean, alignment with regard to matters that are actually supposed to align. That's the first thing, Jefferson. The second thing, Jefferson, is telling listen very carefully. One, then, while taking into account what Lawrence has said, number of master issues that are in the data, more of court-related issues, that is acceptable as well. But there's another aspect that actually created impression in one's mind that the other tiers of government, as you say, will be other tiers. If I pay a bail of a particular traffic fine, and this incident happens in Zera, within a municipality. Now I want to check if by any chance, because this bill is titled Section 75, by any chance, the body that is representing the local municipality has also made its voice here somewhere on the line, because I think that will be very important. Thank you very much.
Can we address the first one, the fulfilling of the of this this body of child who died. Yeah, the lawful burial order, what do we mean by that? Because there are some cultures where a child will die and will bury it immediately. Is that becoming a good idea? I know in our culture, there's a thing born, whatever. You don't even mention that before. You just bury it there. The elders will bury it there, either in the evening or in the morning. When you wake up there, there won't even be anything. So that would that not be regarded as the concealing, the death? Because we bring some other concepts that are foreign to some of us. I wonder when. I understand where someone, for example, when you abort and you aborting them, you try to consider put the poor thing in the toilet. I don't understand. But we might be opening some of the things to even things are issues that are not supposed to be here. What do we mean by this thing here? Unless my understanding correct, I'm just out. I'm off the mark.
whatever, these are some of the unintended consequences that are putting in here. In response to other questions, can I address this one as well?
Chair, that's a difficult one. But this, you know, that the concept of a lawful burial order has been in the legislation. If you just have a look at subsection 2, that it's been deleted now, or that it's been proposed that it be deleted. It has been there, it's been there since 1935. But I hear what, you know, you're bringing another dimension in there. So we're not bringing anything new into the bill by placing it in subsection 1. It has been there all the time, but that is something that we might need to have a look at and come back. What I might mention, Chair, is that in the portfolio committee, although the portfolio committee passed, there were questions raised on certain aspects, and I think it was regarding subclause 2, the new subclause 2, and there were some sort of uncertainties as far as that was concerned in the department, and although the portfolio committee passed it, it requested the department to consult with role players and come back to Parliament if necessary. And I'm just wondering whether this concept that you're talking about now and the problem that it might be having, whether that shouldn't also form part of that investigation. Chair, just on Mr. Massetti, I need to just get clarity. He was referring to the other bill and the synergy with this one. I wasn't too sure.
It is quite clear that there is some kind of a relationship between that bill and this one. I want to understand from there is a discussion to ensure that there is an alignment in the federal order. From that you might encounter in the long run, especially when you begin to implement. Will be when you want to implement some of the things that are in this bill that relates to the transport traffic management. We find that one contract is this one. I'm trying to check that. The second question, Chairperson, was with regard to the body that represents the local government. Section 75, it has some matters that relate to Section 76, that what municipalities, certain things will be happening, activities in the local municipality. If we want them to say something with regard to what we're doing. Now, in Section 75, therefore, what it means, you need the provincial, the national body that represents the municipality to say something to that. That's what they should say. Is that a good one?
Chair, no, that hasn't been done with reference to those two specific
I happen to be aware and to be engaged by transport in relation to that legislation, and that is basically the introduction of the native system and the regulation of the conduct of privacy. It does not relate to the payment of funds. It relates largely to the recovery of the payment, whether it has been paid, of serving offending, which does not warrant admission of case. For example, if you have committed an offense which will entitle you to lose some points, your driver's license, etc. So that's the regulation of the drivers as compared to the admission of guilt. So this relates purely to pay admission of guilt, monies which people choose to pay in choice by choosing not to go to court. So those are methods which already come to a court, they have gone through all the other processes. They are now justiciable, or they must appear before court. So this is a letter, but there's an interrelation between the two, and that cutting around this point. So just to raise the last point, the municipalities, although the practice is that we find that a particular municipality is a fixed certain amount of action of gifts in relation to the offences. Those amounts are fixed by magistrate in terms of the current installation, not by municipality. What happens is that the municipality of a particular area will go to the magistrate and make recommendation, then they approve by magistrate to be applicable within that area, etc. Now what this legislation does, it takes that which was given to magistrate and provides some kind of uniformity across the country, which means there will be then be a follow-up in terms of the municipalities to adapt. Not that they cannot have their put a list. They still have their put a list, but informed by what the threshold has been placed by the national minister in terms of the admission of care.
And Chair, just to add on to that, as I said before, there will, you know, in that process, again, it has to be preceded by enormous amount of consultation. There's going to be a massive consultation process.
Is there a response to a question of Mukhalifa about the matters related? Yeah, can you go to that one before I allow him?
Sorry, which one was that, Chair? I think CISO is going to assist here, but my sense is that it should be the way it is. It's in larger than it was said, this is a very long cycle. If you put it after each end, it's going to double in size.
It represents all the acts that are there.
It represents all the acts.
Okay.
Chairperson, I hear what Ms. Kosana is saying, but the bill that I'm referring to, it would be easier, I'll draw the bill and give it to the department and they wouldn't have a look at it. Because there was a specific question that I put to the department, that is now the next one, that did you consult this issue with justice? They said, yes, it comes from the legislature. They said, please help us. Make this law so tight that we can actually put the heavy sentence. So that I don't believe it, because every magistrate you ask, are you in agreement with the prescribed sentence? They always said, look, don't take our discretion away. We know what we are doing in court. It's not for you to impose laws that go that line. She said, yes, we consulted with the magistrate, and they are aware of it. I'm going to deal and give it to them so that they can look at it, because I really have some questions about it. And when I was giving, in fact, addressing, in fact, briefing the portfolio committee, one member of the committee, Mr. Walmaran, he was once a magistrate. He agreed with me that this is not what actually should be contending in the field. But, well, the mandate comes from the province, so they say yes, it's yes. But I'll draw the people.
Maybe before you respond, if I was reading through some of the clauses from clause 5, they go up until. Which is the minister and now assessing the admission of guilt amount. I'm thinking, how is this going to happen? Or maybe the question is, can the minister delegate these other powers from other people? He can feel that, or the minister will have a one size fits all to say, this offense, this of guilt is this much. This offense, I am scared if that's the arrest. I see the new visitors, the people who were part of us for a very long time at the bank. Madam, welcome.
know, when I see you, I remember those old days. Those good old days. Yeah. Any other questions before the response would be adjourning the next 8 minutes.
I'm thinking again. It's going to be a huge task. And after plenty of consultation, but there is going to have to be some sort of categorization to answer your question directly. Have a look how you can categorize similar pieces of similar classes or categories of offences and in one bundle.
This won't be implemented now. This will implement, I don't know when. You know, what Mr. Prasanna said there is really excited me to understand that I really wish we can this thing of saying of days. Now, I agree with making it easy for people to pay days, right? Now, what happens if, let's say, the victim, through their lawyer, they want to urge the prosecutor to oppose days? Why someone is busy paying somewhere there and you want to oppose this thing? What? Or it should only apply when bail is granted?
Yes.
Okay, only at the end. Okay, because I was worried that I'm going to have a free ride. Now it's fine. Any other questions, colleagues? I can see this week they're taking a toll on you, but you don't have a choice. Let's wait. Now, let's go to clause 10. The assessment by only two words.
Psychiatrist.
Currently, how many people? Can they assess at the same time, or you send the assessment to this one, then again to another psychiatrist? How was it now, and how was it done before? The assessment was done at the same place by just three people, or from now to be staggered, to do it in installment. Teresa will do it now, and then Teresa will do it just proof if Teresa was right. Again and again by some other beyond somewhere else.
Do we have
why not one person? Or you feel there might be some
sir, amongst others is because the offense with which the person will be charged with is a very serious offense. Like in murder cases, And the fact that it the provision says a panel suggests that you know there's that sitting of psychiatrists who assess this person.
Chair, can I give you a bit of background there? Section 79 deals with the constitution of the panel to have a look into the mental capacity of a person, and that's, you know, that's done by order of court. And just to give you a bit of background, at the moment, as Teresa says, in the case of serious offences, and they mention murder, culpable homicide, rape, or another charge involving serious violence, that section 79 requires a panel of three persons. In the case of less serious offences, section 79 only requires one person. But then a bit of history. The section was amended, and I'm just going to read a bit of history that I've got. The section was amended by the Criminal Matters Amendment Act of 1998 after an investigation by the Law Reform Commission. Prior to these amendments, this section in the case of very serious offences required at least two psychiatrists, one who is the medical superintendent of a psychiatric hospital designated by the court or psychiatrist appointed by such medical superintendent at the request of the court, and one who is appointed by the court who is not in the full-time service of the state. It did, however, allow for a third psychiatrist appointed by the accused person, whereas the present position now is that there must be a third psychiatrist. So in the past, there was only for two, and then it was suggested that it be three. In hindsight, that proved to be problematic. And at least such proportions that cases are withdrawn because you can't, as Teresa mentioned, that you can't get always get family psychiatrists to private psychiatrists, notwithstanding the increase in their fees to do cases like this. And it's had serious repercussions. And I must go even further to say that the problem is particularly acute in Gauteng. It's not necessarily the same across the whole country. But serious cases have been withdrawn because they cannot prove the mental capacity of the person because you can't constitute a panel of three people. But what this, although it might seem as if we're reverting to the previous situation, it's not doing away with three psychiatrists in totality. It's saying that the court has a discretion in justifiable circumstances to say, okay, in this particular case, two will suffice. But what must happen is prosecutor must request the court to say, because the prosecutor has to organize all this. If the prosecutor has difficulty in constituting a panel of three, then it will apply formally to the court and say, can we do away with the one in this particular case and only have two? But the bill makes it quite clear there are directives, and the NDPC must issue directives regarding the cases and circumstances in which a prosecutor may apply to have a reduction in the number. So I think there are checks and balances. So on the one hand, we're sitting with a really serious practical problem, and on the other hand, we're trying to keep those checks and balances in that we don't lose totally what we've got at the moment.
Yeah, I think we can stop here. I'm just being reminded by my secretary. By the way, we're having a meeting at V227. That's my party.
They're moving up and down here.
Come again?
They're not coming here because they keep going back to their office now. It seems to look like the question of the venue.
No,
they are not coming. Where are they going? To the people's school. Yeah, there's a request by Dion. I want to address us on some matters. I don't know what we're going to do. You can share them with me first. I'll be shocked like everybody else. And almost sometimes this is a whole thing. But no, that was the right time. I think let's go here. We'll continue, and I don't know when, because the S2 is local government at last time. So, yeah. My office will see how we deal with it. Because I'm told there will be, Parliament will be sitting up until whatever, and
arrangement that we might sit again in January. Who knows? So we try to, we'll see. And our live material is to look at the parliamentary process. The only thing I give us is to quickly say whatever so that we rush to the other meeting.
Thank you very much, Chair. I feel like this proverbial lamb being led to slaughter. But, Chair, there are four matters before the committee at this point in time that still need to be dealt with. The first relates to the salaries of judges, and JD will deal with that. Then there are three sets of rules that have been submitted to the committee in the course of this year that have not yet been finalized by the committee. The three sets of rules have been approved by the portfolio committee this morning, and I have been requested by the portfolio committee to make this request to you, Chair, to please consider these rules. The first set of rules relates to the Promotion of Access to Information Act, very important rules. You will recall, I think it's in the legislation that you're considering now, the deadline for the finalization of these rules has been extended, and we need to finalize these rules as soon as possible. That's the first set of rules. The other set, two sets of rules relate to appeal procedures in the Magistrates Court as well as the Supreme Court of Appeal. It is not complicated rules. They've been made by the Rules Board. The Secretary of the Rules Board is here, and Mr. J.B. Kosana is also a member of the Rules Board. They are here to give you a briefing, and I also have one of my officials in here to assist if there are any questions. So, Chair, I must apologize for this, but the request is that if it's at all possible for you to today still consider these rules. We have made copies, and I can make that available to you. It was dealt with, as I say, by the Portfolio Committee this morning, and they approved all three sets of rules.
When are the things referred to our committee?
It's very difficult to say, but it was in the course of this year. It was fairly early in this year that it was referred to the chairperson of the NCOP. Yeah, I've been informed that it's around about February.
Was it referred to our committee or to the NCOP?
It was submitted to the chairperson of the NCOP and to the Speaker of the National Assembly.
Now, because my office is very diligent, I don't think they would speak in. Okay. But now, this salaries of for judges, when were this referred to? Okay, while you're still preparing, I think you can give it them. We'll ask for a slot in the afternoon when we're done with local government. Because now I've been just being ambushed. There's no way I can put this in now. As I said, if it was discussed with me earlier on, I would have done some other trick. But I'm just shocked like all members here. We'll see, after the meeting with local government this afternoon, after 2, I'll offer a slot that we see there's this class again to consider. But I'll verify. Where was this stuck? Because I won't just ignore something like this. If it was stuck somewhere, we'll have to check. Because I don't want to be regarded as this committee that is irresponsible. And we've been sitting, you know our style. At times we'll sit up until very late. Like yesterday, we knocked off after 7 to show our dedication. If we knew about some of these things, we have addressed them. But no, we know you have your request. We'll consider them this afternoon.
Thank you, Chair. I've just been informed that the judge's salaries is still with the National Assembly, and you can consider the changes to the salaries tomorrow. But if we can finalize the rules as soon as possible, that's what you said.
Yeah, but...
No, tomorrow I don't have a slot for anything. It's only tomorrow now.
Just indicate, Honorable Chair, there were some technical errors on the calculation, which have been approved by the which have been corrected on the judges' salaries, and are now with they have now been dealt by the committee, so they need to come through here. We just wanted we'll discuss this with the chairman after this meeting, so that they don't get packed. We can have crisis at the court in the meantime.
In future, can I be still taken on board so that I'm not surprised here? What is for me is I was informed on time to talk to my colleagues even before the meeting, but just to be ambushed like this, I feel undermined and this must just stop it. Because we can't be dictated to, we have a program to run. This is unacceptable. Colleagues who are not late for other meetings, listen, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It's just to... I'm not sure that the members are aware that at 1:30 they're supposed to go for a quarter shoot for the whole parliament outside the MA. At 1:30, it's for the whole parliament. So whatever we do, we have to quickly go.
Yeah, where is the food? Outside.
Yeah.
Everybody's invited to enjoy our delicious food outside. But at the same time, let's rush as quick as we can to the other meeting at the beginning.
Yeah.
The meeting comes to where is the place as well? Yeah, we'll come to the same thing, but this is
Can wake up. They just call them.
I wake you up and say,
so I don't know why most people are sick on that. And okay.